Hello, everybody, and welcome to the big show. It's our big romance show, and it's called Strange Bedfellows. And we have a guest. We have a special guest. I'm Jack Shepherd.
I'm Tanner.
And our guest is Kat Sebastian.
Hi.
Oddly human-like appearance.
Yeah.
Kat, last time we discussed your book, Unmasked by the Marquess, I would say we had a 20-minute conversation about how Kat Sebastian sounds like what you would call a cat if there was already someone in your house whose name was Sebastian. So it just to like clarify between, you know, a human, a potential human Sebastian and a cat Sebastian.
But it occurred to me today that you could, I guess you're, it looks like you're a dog person, but if you got a cat and named your cat Cat Sebastian, then you could have conversations about, are you talking about Cat Sebastian or Cat Sebastian?
An endless potential.
Something to think about.
It would be a pretty wild power move to name your cat after your full name. But, yeah.
Kat, you have selected a book for us today to read.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. Would you like to tell us what the book is and
sure.
why you chose it?
Sure. Okay, so the book is The King's Man by Elizabeth Kingston, and it is a medieval set in the border between Wales and England during the time right after England has like very violently and aggressively colonized Wales. And so the two characters are Ranulph, who is basically the king's hired gun. He's the king's assassin. And Gwynplaine, who is, her mother is like a Welsh freedom fighter. And so she's been raised to, at this period of time, there's like a lot of basically, you know, guerrilla warfare going on against the English. And so she's been raised to take part in that. And so she basically is a knight, where she is very good at swords and knives and fighting and that kind of thing. And so Ranulph gets injured and winds up being found by Gwynplaine and her men. And they think they're going to just bring him as a captive to the King of England in order to look less suspicious or something. And then plot ensues.
Yeah, they both have a claim to some estate. Kat, something you should know is I'm terrible with the names of places and characters when it's like a contemporary romance.
Yeah.
And they're like places I'm familiar with, and it's even worse when it's all like Welsh places and Welsh names. But they both have claim to this big estate. Gwynplaine, because she was betrothed to the Lord, and Morrissey, because
yep, nailed
he,
it.
he was a squire at the estate and killed.
He killed his daddy,
his stepdaddy.
It's got what it's a classic four-act structure, which has been common, I think, since, you know, the Poetics of Aristotle. This is just how you tell stories. It begins with what I call a Mortal Kombat narrative.
Sure,
act, of course, is the Mortal Kombat narrative where a great fighter wakes up in a strange place and has been brought, you know, it's standard Mortal Kombat stuff. And he wakes up and he's kind of prisoner to Gwynplaine. 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 Okay.
It's Gwynplaine. Like, according to the audiobook narrator, which is where, like, my only source here, it's Gwynplaine. But like, I read it with my eyes the first couple of times that I read it. And so like in my head, it's just like Gwen.
You said it very confidently, and then Tanner said it confidently, which made no sense to me. And then, of course, I remember Tanner has also listened to the audiobook.
Yeah.
The second act of this classic, you will know this stuff because you're a romance novelist, Kat.
No, I'm listening to this. This is actually all new to me. I'm like, okay, wait, now tell me what this, like, this warrior wakes up. Like, I don't know about this.
It's a Mortal Kombat narrative.
So it's a tale as old as time. The Bard, I think, originally wrote about it when he wrote Mortal Kombat, the video game.
Mm-hmm.
The Johnny Cage wakes up in sort of the like fighter verse, you know, where he needs to challenge all these supreme fighters from every dimension.
Yeah. And then you usually...
Sorry. How many... We should take a step back.
Yeah.
How many of the Mortal Kombat games have you played?
Me?
Yeah.
Zero. It took me a minute to ping that this was a video game, actually.
Sorry.
Okay.
How many of the books, the novelizations of the games have you read?
Or written?
None. You're going to be surprised. No, I didn't know there were novelizations. Okay. It's really a journey of discovery for me.
So you've just seen the films then? Okay.
There's a new one. It's great.
I will look forward to it.
Traditionally, you follow a Mortal Kombat first act with a midnight run second act.
Sure.
That's, of course, the classic film with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin, where one of the guys is a bounty hunter and he or she has kidnapped somebody and is taking them back to the king. Or, you know, the mob boss in the case of Midnight Run. But there's a whole section. This was my favorite section of the book, which is kind of their, like... The thing Tanner and I are learning about romances is that they kind of have to be at odds with one another at first.
Yeah.
He's kidnapped, and it turns out that even though he's the like a Johnny Cage-level fighter, the reason that he can't escape is, so she...
Yeah. Well, she's sort of like a Sonya level fighter.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's
to kind
better,
of maintain the Mortal Kombat.
I think that's, we want to be on comfortable footing for, because you said you wrote some of those novelizations, right, Kat, for Mortal Kombat?
The Mortal Kombat.
All of them.
So check those out.
In most romances, follow their second Midnight Run act with a Beauty and the Beast act, which is Princess Alone in Sad Castle.
Right. Of course. God, it's been so long since I took a Shakespeare class, you know. Like, I've been out of college for however many years.
And then so Gwenellian, I'm the one who can't pronounce it. I'm the one who's supposed to be able to pronounce it.
There's a sneaky TH in there.
Yeah, that's what always trips me up. Well, anyway, the princess.
You're from England.
She marries him early, which is surprising. Well, I was surprised for a romance.
You grew up next to Wales.
Yeah. I'm keeping in the tradition of my countrymen not being able to pronounce anything Welsh. But they get married, which is nice. They're kind of forced to, but it kind of seems like by this point they've grown to grudgingly respect one another and also have a passionate lovemaking with one another.
Oh, yeah.
Which can always help with that. But then they get married, and then she's lonely princess in the castle, like Beauty and the Beast for a while. And then, of course, we finish always. You always finish a romance novel with a Taken act.
Taken, right. The hit Qui-Gon Jinn film.
Yes.
Where Qui-Gon Jinn's daughter gets kidnapped, and he has to hunt down.
He has to use his particular set of skills to go and get
Jedi
back.
Powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the whole book, right?
There you go. So. Yeah. There's something about herbs in there too, but that's the.
Yeah, she's an herbalist too.
Yeah.
What is that from?
Yeah. Herbalist. I think that's Friday.
The Ice Cube film.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, what a rich tapestry.
And that's how you weave together a book. Is that how you do it, Kat, when you write your romances? We loved your one. We read Unmasked by the Marquess. We really enjoyed that one. That was with Robin and
Pembroke?
Lord Pembroke. Alistair.
Alistair.
The boys in these books, I think, all need to learn to love themselves, is a thing that I'm learning.
That is like a big, I mean, that's like, that seems to be a theme with all of romance, right? Where you have, I have that same mug. Does it say T-Rex on it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're totally going to have to edit that out. Yeah. We have the same mug.
Oh, no. That's going to be,
that's going to be the promo that we'll release. Yeah. That's awesome. I love this mug. It's my number one tea mug.
We had one and it broke. And so I had to order another one immediately. And now the old one has a plant in it because that's how beloved it is.
I'm the same. I can't throw them out.
It's broken, but yeah.
I can't throw them out. I also have a mug that says changes on it and I'm afraid of it.
Why are you afraid of it?
Because it says changes on it, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you're afraid.
Like, I don't know. It's like a powerful thing to put your coffee in. First thing in the morning. It's not what you really
God, you're so much like a romance male hero.
That's a, Yeah. It's a third act. It's a third act romance hero who's not afraid of change.
That's right. Okay? Yeah.
But yes, romance heroes almost, and this is like, there's some gender stuff happening here, right? Like romance heroes, like their journey often is like, to like learn to be okay with having feelings, like, and to learn to be, you know, like, and to learn to be okay with like, to learn like some kind of self-acceptance. Usually the self-acceptance involves, not usually, often it, in like a lot of like classic romance novels, that self-acceptance involves getting over your daddy issues, you know?
Yeah.
And so we do see that like Randolph is like totally a, like he comes from that tradition of romance heroes who are emotionally closed off, but like usually there's going to be something to soften that, you know, usually there's going to be, like I was saying on Twitter, like I was reading this again, like from the point of view of someone, now I've written my share of cranky heroes, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm reading this as someone thinking like, you know, what would I do with that kind of hero in my hands? And like, I immediately would give them like, maybe they have like a war wound from fighting Napoleon, you know what I mean? Like, where maybe they have like a, maybe they have like a three-legged dog or like, or whatever. Okay. Like there's going to be something like that. Right. But Randolph has nothing. Okay. He doesn't even like the dog. Okay. He contemplates kicking the dog. Like he is this close to kicking. He's like, I shouldn't kick the dog. And you know, he's thinking about it. Like the dog got away easy. And at the end, he's like, I really hope that the dog comes to say hello. Right. And the dog comes over and he's like, that annoying dog.
Yeah. He grows a little bit throughout the course of the novel.
There's still room.
Yeah.
There's room for growth. And that's the other reason I really like this book, is because at the end, neither of the characters has achieved, like, they're not at the place where they're going to go. They're not at the place where they need to go, but they're on the road. Like they were in a really bad, not okay place. And now they have the tools to get to be like, you can see like functionality is on the horizon, you know?
Yeah. I like it when the male heroes of these books like have some issue, like some unresolved issue that like looms over them and like drives them wild and like makes them like deeply depressed and suicidal. And then you discover like 2/3 of the way in what it is. And I love it when it's something very low stakes. Like we just read A Scot in the Dark by Sarah McLean. And it's like a big beefy Scotsman, and like he finally admits his thing, and he's like, "Oh, the thing I'm so ashamed of is
too beefy.
I did too much good sex.
Yeah,
when I was in college, and now I have a reputation of being like so good at sex."
I love that book.
And similarly, Morrency's like, "Oh, I'm such a devil. What I did was kill a man who was a known monster.
Domestic abuser,
yeah.
And I can't live with the shame of like freeing all these people from his reign of terror."
And like, and he wouldn't have that problem at all if he had told like one person, okay? Like if he had actually used his words to describe his feelings to one person, any one person, he could have picked them at random, okay? And that one person would have been like, actually, that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, actually, you're allowed to kill him.
It's too hard. It's too scary and hard. You can't be that vulnerable, you know?
No. That's really important. And when he does tell someone, he tells Bentley, and she's like, yeah, actually, I think you're allowed to do that.
She's like, it's fine. Yeah.
It actually seems fine. Yeah.
He learns early on he's put in a very vulnerable position. Because he's like all wounded, and it seems like she's going to be the healer. She plays a lot of roles in this one. She's a healer, but she's also a fighter. She's an herbalist. She's got to do it all. She's got to be the Beauty and the Beast in the castle later too. So he has to learn about vulnerability. Then he has to learn about commitment, because they're doing the midnight run portion of the book.
Right.
And he's able to escape, but actually is now they're bound together because they're being chased by outlaws. And then he has the hardest test of all, which is when your mother-in-law tries to betray and murder your best friend. And you have to mediate the conflict without kind of getting anyone too pissed off at you.
Including the King of England.
Yeah, including the King of England. And that's the hardest
test
for a man.
I've never been in that position.
Yeah. But he kind of pulls that off. I feel like that's growth. Because her mom is like constantly trying to persuade her to do a big rebellion against the king.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Her mom wants her to like literally straight up die. Okay. Like yeah. that is like they both, also the mom is the hero and then is the heroine in the next book. Okay.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, really. Like,
who does she fall in love with? God, is it the King of England? That would be so good.
Well, hang on. I've got a hot segment for us that's related to that. It's a hot new segment. Okay. So all these books have sequels. Yeah. And my new segment, and so Kat, since you've read it, you could maybe mediate this and arbitrate it, is let's guess what happens in the sequel.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I've got a few guesses to start us off here. I'm gonna read a passage. You have found the chamber to your liking? Aye, she said, dipping her fingertips in the bowl of water presented by a servant. There are windows of polished amber. I have never seen their like. Amber is found on the shore here. He stopped himself from saying that there were many pretty bits of it about, said in ladies' baubles. So the kingdom of Morency's estate is full of amber. I think they're setting us up for a Jurassic Park.
It's La Nuit.
Yeah, that's it, actually.
We're gonna pull the DNA out of these dinosaurs, to quote that cartoon DNA. Yeah, and she's going to fall in love with a dinosaur?
I don't know.
She's going to command dinosaurs.
Yes, in the big rebellion.
I feel like I took British history in high school, and I don't remember whales rising up with dinosaurs.
Well, you could take a little bit of liberty, I think, when you're doing a historical romance. I mean, this has a lot of
disbelief.
A lot of like real historical facts. I looked up a lot of stuff. There's some really interesting stuff about the Welsh legend that comes into this, but I don't know. Maybe she does a dinosaur sequel. I've got another suggestion here.
Okay.
She could not say, this is another passage. She could not say what broke his look, but in a blink it was gone, replaced by a brief flash of revulsion. For an instant, she thought the pain had brought him to illness, and she took a reflexive step forward. But no, he was not ill. She knew that look. The tiny curled misery that lived hidden in her belly recognized it.
Oh, Alien 3.
Oh, I was thinking Quato from Total Recall.
Oh, that's good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Alien of some kind.
In Alien 3, Ripley has an alien baby growing in her.
It's an Alien 3. And that's a sequel already,
belly.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen Alien 3, Kat?
Nope.
Have you seen Total Recall?
Nope.
So you've just read the novelizations of those two.
I wrote those. That was your sound that they wrote those.
Yeah, I like those theories. I think she'll probably end up with someone like Mad Dog, though.
I've got one more, and then Kat, you can tell us how right I was.
Okay.
Unless you have one, Tanner.
I just said mine.
So Elined, that's
mommy.
What's her name's mom? Elined turned away from them, making her way out of the hall. Before she reached the door, she stopped and turned. I'll tell him to Claire. Nay, Ranulph answered. I have made a pretty bed for Clifford to lie in.
The big red dog.
Big red dog.
Yeah.
It's very topical at the moment. I think there's a new movie.
Is there?
Yeah. And there's a dog, as you pointed out, there's a dog in this one that is kind of a feature player. It's like whether Ranulph, the emo prince, is going to love the dog. And he kind of does by the end. What if it gets real big?
And so you're saying they're making a movie of the sequel of The Kingsman?
They're not even starting Clifford. There's a new Clifford movie out, I think. So it could be the sequel. Well, so what? Okay. How right were we close?
Well, without spoiling it, there are no dinosaurs, and there's no big red dog.
It feels like so it's an Alien sequel. Wow.
Yeah, let's go with that.
So many of those.
Yeah.
How do you say dinosaur in Welsh,
Tanner? That's not something that anybody either knows or Welsh. Could reasonably find out. In a
Maybe
short
they don't even have a word
time.
For it. Why would they? Right? Why would they even have a word?
They probably
for it?
Find a lot of dinosaurs.
You think so?
Yeah.
It's a dinosaur. I was going to maybe suggest maybe there were dinosaurs, but they were just using the Welsh phrase for it, so it was hard to glean. But
I'm very keen, Kat, for you to help us with a project that we have. I know you have to leave at some point, so I want to get this. We normally do this segment a little bit later in the episode, but as you know, romance novelists make millions upon millions of dollars from every book that they write.
We live in palaces. Yep.
I mean, you must. Romance podcasters do. So yes. Romance novelists must make like exponentially more.
Each book brings in millions upon millions, and you, and no offense, but you, all you have to do is write one. We have to read one every week.
Every week.
Impossible.
It's a lot harder, and we're making a lot less.
Right.
Sad story.
But we've figured out a workaround, and what we're doing is every time we read one of your novels, we take from it what we can learn, and we're putting it back into our own romance novel so we can kind of bring in some of those big bucks that you guys are raking in. And the novel that we're working on is called Love in the Time of Horses.
Beautiful.
I'm hoping that since we've got a real expert, Tanner and I have kind of been fumbling around in the dark a little bit, and I'm sure this will come as a surprise to you, we keep accidentally adding, I think, more sci-fi and fantasy elements than is strictly necessary.
Right.
So maybe you can help us course correct a little bit. If I can give you the sketch of the story we have so far, can you help us maybe hone it a little bit? I think one thing we need is we haven't had our heroes meet yet. So meet cute, if you can do a meet cute for us, or like figure out what it is that she doesn't like about him or he doesn't like about her. I'll briefly sketch out the story, I think, as we have it.
Mm-hmm.
I think grounding it in history like this too, and kind of bringing in some of the Mortal Kombat stuff is going to be going to help a lot too.
Really help, yeah. Something historical that can kind of give it like a real structure. So in the Time of Horses, it's horses v vampires.
Okay.
And we've got.
Wait, are either of your characters horses or vampires?
No.
No.
The horses are kind of a villain just in general. The horses. Do you think we should have a horse character?
Okay, I'm just going to say, like, if horses versus vampires is, like, a central conflict in your universe, okay? Like, you've got to have a horse or a vampire as one of your main characters.
We've got a vampire as the gentleman.
We sort of thought of it as, like, a larger conflict that we're, like, you know, like, it's like if you were on some far-flung world in Star Wars.
I think, Tanner,
I think I've heard of the Empire. But
we've got to listen to our expert here.
And you're right.
Also
got to
listen to
this?
Some classic writing advice, which is kill your darlings. You're going to hate this. Currently, our heroine, Lady Greatcleft, is a Gungan.
Yeah.
Like Jar Jar Binks.
It doesn't sound like a horse or a vampire.
Let's have her be a horses.
That's going to be tough for me.
So, like, one of them is either a horse or a vampire. Go with a vampire, okay? And then the other one is raised by horses, okay? And has all of this, like, allegiance and loyalty. Like, the horses saved her, you know, or him, whatever.
She loves the horses. Okay.
Yeah. And so she's, like, working as a spy or something, okay? And so she has to go and get, like, some kind of plot device from the vampires. And... like, so you've got your conflict right there, and one of them can kidnap the other.
He's a vampire. He's going to kidnap her.
There you go.
Good. She's got to get.
I think maybe
device.
she can stay a Gungan in this situation because
I really want her to be.
Well, I think it helps her sort of like fly under the radar. You know, like the vampires see that, and they're like, surely she's not aligned with the horses. She's a Gungan.
Because when
you know?
I think of someone who flies under the radar, I'm definitely thinking of a Gungan.
George Jar Binks. It's such an understated character. Yeah. That's something that we want to take from George Lucas too. Is just the understatedness of Jar Jar Binks. Mm-hmm, you've really got to look to kind of see the depth to that character.
Really subtle.
Okay, I like this. And I saw you, I think I saw you did a tweet about this recently where you put something in square brackets
to
fill
do.
In later. That's useful. Mm-hmm. So she's just got to get plot device.
That's and I think,
yeah, she's got to go get plot device from the vampires. Mm-hmm. Let me run. I think this is our first line. We workshopped it and then I forgot it, but I've tried to put it. Tell me if you think this is a good first line. I think it's iconic.
Yeah.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that a Gungan in possession of a vial of horse blood must be in want of a vampire.
That's, you know what?
Chills.
Do you think that works? Is it trying to do too much?
No, that's an instant classic.
Okay.
So it's now we have our plot device, too. It's what was it? Horse blood?
Plot device. Plot device. We just call it that. It's a bomb.
Oh, okay. She's a demolitions expert.
Yeah, she's a demolitions. We can't have her be too many things. She loves the horses. So this is, we've got horse v vampire. This is, mm-hmm. and then so they meet. What, and the meet cute is he kidnaps her, right? We're actually finally moving with this, Tanner. And we took all the alien stuff out, the Grimm Space stuff.
We'll sneak it back gradually. And we didn't take all the alien stuff out. She is a Gungan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So.
Okay. This is.
I'm happy with that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. This is great. And we'll give you a co-writing credit on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Please don't.
Yeah.
Fine. Points on the back end too. You're twisting our arms.
Is there anything else about this novel that we have not? There's a lot. I love this one, I should say. It was fun. Yeah. It was really fun.
Yeah, I love this book. This is like whenever I have to make a list of my like top 5 or 10 historical romances, this goes on the list. And every time I read it, I like it more. You know, like it's reading it is a pleasure. The prose is just like, you know, the writing is just lovely. The characterization is rich. It's one of my favorites. The whole series is fantastic.
We really love Regency. And this is a little like...
This was almost too far back. It was scary for me to go this far back in history because it's like you don't expect a romance novel to, like Regency is like so like it's so saturated as like a world where romance is thought to take place, but like this is like 12th century, right?
It's like there used to be more romances, like more non-Regency historical romances. Medievals used to be like a big thing, like Vikings and stuff. Big thing. Knights Templar, like big. Okay. And then at some point, all of history just like condensed to be like Regency. Okay. And like maybe you can have like a little bit of late Victorian as a treat, but like really we're talking like 1800 to 1825 is like all of it. But there used to be a lot more, but this book isn't like most of the medievals that are even in existence. You know, it's just because you don't have like a lot of like fancy castles and banquets, and you know, it's like a political book about freedom fighters at the end of the day. You know,
yeah, it's kind of scrubby. They're all like camps, and they're all dirty all the time.
They are dirty. It is a very dirty book. Like.
I think Dan Brown probably put a lot of stink on on Knights Templar, so people started shying away from it a little bit. But
yeah,
all right, this is a good time for us to take a little break, and you have to go take your child to the doctor, Kat. So Tanner and I are gonna soldier on.
Thank you guys so much for inviting me. I had a great time.
Yeah, thank you.
Where can people find you?
Oh, katsebastian.com or on Twitter and Instagram at @katswrites.
And yeah, look for her Mortal Kombat novelizations and the alien stuff. And we love your work and we're so grateful that you came on our show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Everybody, it's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner. And we're back, and we forgot to recap the book, didn't we? I mean, we did. We did it,
yes,
but not
we're
the
back.
Way we'd
Thank
like
you,
to do
Kat,
it.
So much.
She's gone. She has gone.
It's great. It was great to have you on the podcast. Gone. Quick question. When you're writing your books, how do you do school?
She did leave.
You said you had kids. How do they do school?
She's gone.
Oh, she's gone. Okay.
She's gone. It's just us.
I think, yeah, Kat, thank you so much for joining us. You did do an admirable job. Even though we didn't ask you to, you did start to recap the book a little bit, but we should probably fill in some of the details for listeners, Jack. And I think I was going to put you
on
the spot.
Big bad clock.
Yep. I was going to put you on the spot when Kat was on, but I'm going to just do it now. Yeah. You claim to be such a hotshot.
Do I?
You claim to be such a hotshot. You're always showing off and always talking yourself up about how good you are at any kind of English accent.
No.
So I would love you to take the next 90 seconds
Absolutely
to do
not.
Your best Middle English dialect.
Nope.
And recap this book.
Absolutely not.
Throw a little bit of a Welsh wang in there, too.
I will not do that.
And if you know any kind of Norman English.
And I won't.
I would love to get a little bit of that spice in there.
They got
too.
A little
so
dialect.
I'll go ahead and, set the 90
Why
second timer here. Because you were really good at English accents.
I'm not
you
doing
say.
That.
You always claim to be really good at
I
English
don't
accents,
claim that.
Including, I think, you have claimed that many times.
Well, I'm not.
You said, I can do any English accent.
Yeah, I will.
So I want to hear Middle English.
No.
Yes.
No. I guess you describe the book.
Why? That doesn't seem fair.
I always do it.
I know, and I'm asking you to do it again in Middle English.
I'll do it, but not
imagine
in Middle
how,
English.
Imagine how disappointed
Put 90
our
seconds
listeners
on.
Are going to be.
They'll be
to
fine.
Discover
They'll
to,
get over
that
it.
you've gotten this challenge and
yeah.
you've fled from it.
It's
like
the
a,
call
like
rejected.
Some kind of coward.
It's the call rejected.
Yeah, That's, you're gonna get trapped by the Nazgul back in the Shire.
Can you imagine
by the Nazgul?
Say the. Give me a put the timer on and I'll do it.
Okay.
90 seconds, and pay attention to the timer this time.
In 5, 4, 3. Go.
Sir Ranulph is an emo knight, and he, Sir Ranulph of Morenci, and he doesn't want to go to the king, who is his friend, because the king, well, this comes out later, but the king is kind of using him as like an assassin, because he's like such a good fighter. And he killed his own stepdaddy. His stepdaddy was a mean, mean man, but the stepdaddy did love Ranulph, so it's causing him a lot of angst, but he killed his stepdaddy. It was a service to the king and also a service to everyone who knew his stepdaddy. Anyway, he tries in trying to escape from the king. He wanders into foreign territory, wanders into Wales, and gets captured by Gwenllian and her friends. And they kidnap him and take him back to the king, during which time he learns that she's not just a pretty lady, she's also a damn good fighter and the only fighter in the realm who could potentially best him, and she does best him. They go to the king, and the king is like, hey,
seconds.
Guess what? I'm going to get you two married, and it's going to resolve a lot of like political issues for me. And so they get married, even though they profess not to like each other, but clearly they do. But then she's lonely in his castle, and her mom comes, and her mom is like, hey, why don't you come back to Wales with me and start a rebellion against the king? And she's like, that would suck, because it would put my husband, who I love, in trouble. But she goes anyway, and then he comes and rescues her and brings her home and persuades the mom not to do a big rebellion. And they do
beep,
love
beep,
each
beep,
other. And
beep,
that's
beep,
the end. And
beep,
there's
beep,
a dog.
And you're out of time. Wow, Jack. I feel like I learn...
Yeah.
I'm always learning, you know? I
from
learn
me.
Something new every day from you.
Yeah.
From you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just from the world around me. I I guess I had a preconceived notion that I suppose was wrong
yeah.
of what Middle English sounded like.
Yeah.
I sort of assumed it was going to be a lot more like impenetrable, but it sounds so much like modern American English.
Yeah, that's what people don't realize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Gwenth Leon.
She's named after a famous
Mad Dog.
There's a famous Gwenth Leon is the real Welsh Boadicea. And don't come after me. I know a lot of people say Boudica.
Boudica.
But it's also you can say Boadicea. So yeah. Don't come at me again.
It's like an aluminum thing.
Yeah, exactly. But she's the Welsh Boadicea. Basically, she did a big rebellion, and
she's real.
Yeah, and she's mentioned in this novel as like a heroine, as like someone for her namesake to look up to. But she did a big Welsh rebellion, and it totally failed, and she was beheaded.
Yeah, how'd that go?
But it was inspiring to the other Welsh folks, and so they were inspired to do a bunch of also quite badly failed rebellions.
Well, they did their best.
Yeah.
You know?
It's all a little bit sad.
Yeah, good book. It was very historical.
Very historical, yeah.
I learned so much about the 12th century.
Yeah, and there's lots of Mortal Kombat in it, isn't there?
Lots of Mortal Kombat.
They're doing a big fight all the time. And at one point, he's so sad.
She's so tough.
She's so tough, man.
We didn't describe it well enough, but she's so tough. She can kick anyone's ass.
She kicks his ass twice.
Yeah.
It rules.
At one point, they do a big sex scene.
And they do a big sex,
He initiates it by grabbing her chainmail.
Yeah.
Shirt and pulling her towards him. Yeah. It's like, wow, that's...
Okay.
How often has that happened? Yeah.
Yeah. In the 12th century, it was probably fairly common.
I guess you're probably right. And I think a lot of like TikTokers are doing like cosplay these days. They're probably all like fucking in chainmail.
It happens every fucking day.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was well described. And and they do big fights all the time. And she has to choose whether she wants to be a fighter or a lover.
Yeah, but she's not good at being a lover. And that's her main conflict is once she is forced to settle down by King Edward. Edward? Yeah. No.
It's King Edward. Yeah. Who's the king?
King Edward.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she and I want to say Morrissey, but I know it's not right.
It's Morrissey.
Morrissey.
It's Sir Randolph, the emo knight of Morrissey.
Sir Randolph.
Yeah.
It's
Gandalf Morrissey is his name.
Sir Gandalf Morrissey has an equal claim to the throne.
Yeah.
As she does.
Yeah.
To the Morrissey estate.
Yeah.
and I suppose their entire back catalog.
Yeah. Good Morrissey jokes. He's super emo. He's so sad because he killed his daddy, but also just because it's a bummer to be him, just generally.
Yeah. Can we do Burns?
Yeah, sure. It's a segment we have where we do Burns, and it's called our...
I'll do mine.
Yeah, sure.
If that's okay.
Yeah, please.
She's a bit of an herbalist, as we discussed when we were talking.
Yeah, it's very 420 friendly. This one.
It's a 420 friendly book. She's got a lot of different facets to her. She's a tough warrioress. She's a Mortal Kombat like dimensional fighter.
Mm-hmm.
She is a lover of men,
mm-hmm.
specifically. Gandalf Morrissey,
mm-hmm.
and she's an herbalist. She knows how to heal people, and then, in fact, that's how we're introduced to her character. Is she finds Gandalf Morrissey kind of in a fevered frenzy
because her friend hit him with a big
Moors
stick, I think.
Yeah. and she heals him. She nurses him back to life, even though all her men want to kill him because he's a
enemy
English bastard.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But so she's got some training as an herbalist. Morrissey shrugged. He did seem weary. Now that she took the time to look at him. Your head aches, she says. He turned fully to face her. Aye, he said with impatience. Then was that sullen curve to his mouth, the one he had worn for nearly all their journey. She thought of her men, of desultory days in far-flung woods when tempers threatened to burst. We shall send to the kitchen for a chicken. This was met with a lift of his brow. Chicken? Is a cure well known to tie a chicken to the crown of your head, to wherever it may ache, to fix the anus upon the afflicted place. She held her face very still, but his expression was such a perfect stew of confusion, feigned courtesy, and growing disgust that she could not stop her mouth from quivering with mirth. He let out an incredulous laugh. So she tried to convince him to put a chicken anus
put a chicken's butt on his forehead.
To cure his headache. Yeah. And that's a good burn.
I wish they had done it.
Yeah. And then she could have called him like
chicken butt head.
Like anus head. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have ruled.
That was
huge.
Lord
anus head. Huge missed opportunity by Elizabeth Kingston, whose name I'm not sure we've said yet, who wrote this one.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Do you have a burn?
Yeah, I got a burn. It's also when she's trying to heal him early on. He finally comes. The fever has broken.
Heal me, daddy. Heal me, mommy.
Heal me, mommy, he says.
Yeah.
You're awake. Aye, awake and sore in need of ale, Gandalf Morrissey said hopefully. God grant you peace. Do you have some to share? No ale, came the reply. Well then, wine? No wine. No drink and a pounding that would split his skull. I'm arrived.
Wow!
Thank you.
Skull splitting pounding. Sign me up. I'll have what he's having.
Okay. Are you done?
Yes.
Okay. I am arrived in hell at last. Gandalf turned his face away from the door. Too much light would kill him faster than the lack of ale. Not hell, came the reply. Wales, he snorted. It needs a Welshman to find the difference.
Yeah.
And it's a burn on Wales.
I resisted a lot of the Welsh burns because I don't know if that's like culturally insensitive or not. But I guess you're an Englishman. You're allowed to do it because you're, you know, they're...
it's in my blood.
Centuries long oppressor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's super okay for me to do it.
Yeah. It's called punching down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't get in trouble for that.
No.
I'm just reading the burn in the book.
Yeah.
I love the Welsh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those are the burns.
Yeah, it wasn't a very burn-heavy book. I mean, it was silly. There was silly parts, but it's all couched in the fact that it's, you know, whatever, 1280.
Yeah.
So it's not like they had a lot of good humor back then. They were all just struggling to survive.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot to laugh about. Like, they're in their, like, probably in their 20s, and they probably only got, like, 5 to 10 more years to live.
Yeah, yeah.
But according to the actuarial tables, you know? So it's like, there's not a lot. Like, you could occasionally trick someone into putting a chicken's butt on their forehead, and that's what passes for, like, a good piece of comedy for the year.
But back then, that's actually going to shave years off your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's no hygiene, so putting a chicken butt on your head, you're just sort of spraying germs around.
Yeah, it's usually not worth it for the joke.
Yeah.
Should we do our hit segment that's called Two Prude Dudes?
We should.
Yeah.
I should introduce a segment before that.
Okay.
To just kind of describe where I was and what my frame of mind was.
Of course. I'd forgotten
as
about this
I one. Entered this. Yeah. Steamy sex scene.
Remind me what we call this. This is a segment where Tanner specifically describes what he personally was doing when the sexy part happened.
Yes.
In his
Jack,
audio
as you know,
book.
I'm a man who lives with many struggles. I have dyslexia.
Yeah.
I have ADHD.
Yeah.
I have trouble. I'm a slow reader.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like to listen to these audiobooks. Plus, Kat told me that the voice actor for this one is especially good, and he was.
Yeah.
He was really great. So I was excited to listen to the audiobook for this one, but I do listen to these books on audio tape, and because of that, I often find myself in interesting situations where one of these steamy sex scenes will come on, and I like to catalog those moments in a segment I call... Welcome to my red room.
Welcome to my red room. Yes.
And my red room this week, Jack, was I crashed my car a couple months ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my sister-in-law agreed to let me borrow her car.
Mm-hmm.
And the maintenance light came on as we were borrowing it, so I took it to the Valvoline.
Okay.
To get an oil change. And pulled into the oil change bay, had my window all the way down as he was asking me questions about the car and what kind of like synthetic oil I wanted to get. And he said, go ahead and turn on the car and let me and read off the mileage to me. And I did that, and it was right in the middle of this incredibly intense sex scene. And I apologized profusely. I was like, oh, I don't know what that is. Wow, radio's getting so weird these days, huh? And then quickly turned it down.
Drive time, you know?
This is one of my driveway moments, you know? Don't want to get out of the car. I got to finish this one off. So that's my red room this week was the Valvoline oil change bay.
Wow.
So let's get into some of the steamy stuff that these oil change technicians heard.
Yeah, but we're going to clean it up. It's a segment we like to call Two Prude Dudes. And you know, a lot of people listen to this podcast at the dinner table with their families. And so we're going to take the sex scene and we're going to sanitize it and clean it up so you can listen to it without worrying about anyone's sensitive ears. And, you know, we liked reading the sex scene. It's very sexy, but, you know, some people might want to hear a version of it that's a little bit PG.
Yeah.
So should we just get going here? I've captured the naughtiest one.
Yeah, please.
Okay. All right, folks, gather the family around the dinner table, lay the table.
Bring grandma and grandpa in.
Yep. This is going to be absolutely fine and not
maybe your local, maybe your pastor.
Yeah. Pastor's well,
invite
welcome.
Your pastor over for dinner.
Mm-hmm. And then just put this on and everyone can have a nice family friendly time.
Yeah.
Okay. He was everywhere at once. Sounds kind of like Neo. In the Matrix, at the end when he's like everywhere in the Matrix.
Oh, where he's like dodging all those bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hands rucking up her shift.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but it sounds pretty naughty. Oh, maybe he's a computer technician?
He's rucking up her shift? I don't know what rucking means, I guess. And I won't look it up.
Yeah, so you want to just keep that?
I think maybe she's like a, what do you call them? Like a... They're like manual keyboards, you know? Enthusiasts.
Oh, okay. Like a typewriter?
No. Mechanical keyboards. You know, it's like big clicky key keyboards.
Yeah, yeah.
That have like you can totally customize them, get different keycaps, different membranes, all that kind of stuff. Like people, that's a huge like hobbyist market.
Okay, so let's just say hands unsticking.
So she's a mechanical.
Unsticking.
They're both
her
like
shift
mechanical
key.
Keyboard. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so he was everywhere.
He was installing some red key clicker membranes on her mechanical keyboard.
Perfect. Okay. So he's everywhere at once, hands unsticking her shift key.
Yeah.
Tangling her hair, and we'll just have that be installing some red key clicker membranes.
Yeah.
His mouth hot on her throat as she strained toward him eager. Okay. That doesn't really work with what we've been saying, does it?
Not really.
His mouth.
I feel like I don't use... I have a manual keyboard. I feel like I don't use my mouth often on it.
His mouse.
Mouse. Yes, of course.
Yes, his mouth hot mouse. On the mouse pad.
Mouse hot on the mouse pad. Yep, perfect.
As he strained to connect it via USB.
Bluetooth.
Oh, by...
Or USB.
By Bluetooth. Yeah, that's great.
Bluetooth. That's going to be harder to connect.
His body hard against hers, legs tangled as she found the smooth skin of his back, muscle curving. The furrow of his spine that her hands followed down to the swell of his buttocks. We absolutely cannot have... We can't use almost any of that.
Right. His...
His rig, his...
84 key...
Great.
Gaming layout.
Yes!
What's the next sentence?
Hard against hers, legs tangled as she found the smooth skin of his back. His 84 key gaming layout.
Glowing with RGB light
yes.
against her face.
Okay, great. Muscle curving, the furrow of his spine that her hands followed down to the swell of his buttocks.
N key rollover.
Great.
One more time, say the passage.
She found the smooth skin of his back, muscle curving, the furrow of his spine that her hands followed down to the swell of his buttocks. And I'm sorry that I've said buttocks now at least four times and now a fifth time.
So the N key rollover allowing for any number of key presses.
Yes.
A swelling number of key presses
against
his
his
LED backlit keyboard.
Yes. Okay, great. So this is really like fanfic for
mechanical
keyboard enthusiasts. I mean, it doesn't even sound like fanfic. It sounds more like just like a promotional video.
I mean, it might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I enjoy mine. I have one. I enjoy it.
Okay.
I encourage anyone. If you're a fan of like really clicky keys,
yeah,
I encourage you to get a mechanical keyboard.
His hissing intake of breath as he pulled her hands off of his keyboard.
I would say clicky.
His clicky pushing of keys.
Yes.
As he pulled her hands.
Something that just occurred to me. Most of the rest of the book takes place in 1280.
Yeah.
Are we concerned that they may or may not have had mechanical keyboards in 1280?
I am concerned about that now. I'm also slightly concerned it may be too late for us to go back.
Okay. I think we'll probably just have to assume they did.
Yeah. Right? I think
we'll assume that they had mechanical keyboards in 1280.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the thing about mechanical keyboards is it's sort of like a return to form. It's like, yeah, we had all
it's
these like, big clicky keys, and yeah, then we like decided that it was like too cumbersome, so we like stripped down to these like little weird rubber membranes that are so unsatisfying, and now yeah, it's like
we used to do it in
1280 was so good.
Yeah, okay, that seems fine.
Okay,
let's see. So his clicky pushing of the keys as he pulled her hands off of him, off of his keyboard, and up, pinned them at her shoulders while he forced her to type slow.
Okay, that seems fine. That's what it says?
Uh-huh. I mean,
okay,
you know, I've made a few tweaks, like copy.
Oh, you were editing as you went. Okay, that's fine.
Her breath came hard, her body restlessly moving against his
keyboard.
But he took time to touch her everywhere.
To touch her keyboard everywhere.
Yeah, her breath came hard, her hands restlessly moving against his rig, and she took time to touch it everywhere. Just type in all the damn keys.
His rig, yeah. Well, it's that N key rollover, you know? It's like, you can hit as many keys as you want to or need to, so it really promotes, like, a lot of very fast touch typing.
Yeah. His hands and mouth trailed over the keyboard, discovering clickiness. And
I don't think you're supposed to use your mouth.
Well, these are like huge enthusiasts,
right? It's mechanical, so I think you. I suppose you probably could.
Discovering
not going to do any harm to it. They're hardy.
Clickiness and keys that had always hidden beneath, that are always hidden on a boring old MacBook
Air
keyboard,
right,
or whatever.
Dell, dude, I'm getting a Dell.
That even she had never seen before.
Right.
That she did not know herself. Let's see. Let's just finish this paragraph out. Hard muscle and sinew melted.
Fine.
Do you think that's fine?
I mean,
okay. Because they're like typing so hard.
Right. Yeah.
Everything she had valued in her body.
I think that's the nice part about an ergonomic setup too, though. Yeah. It's like, you know, if you're typing, if you're sitting on the couch with your shoulders up, like typing on your laptop, like that's of course going to cause some like long term like ergonomic harm. But if you're sitting at your desk, computer at eye level, keyboard, mechanical keyboard on the desk in front of you, mm-hmm, where you can do some easy touch typing, that's going to help your posture. It's going to help your aching shoulders and your aching back a ton.
Yeah. Tell me if this next clause makes sense to you in the context of what you just said. Okay. Everything she had valued in her body forgotten as his mouth found the womanly places and celebrated them until she gasped with pleasure.
I think it's weird that the mouth is coming up so much. Because
it should be the mouse, I think.
I don't. Mouse. Yes, that's
everything
fine.
She had valued in her previous keyboard rigs forgotten as his mouse
Went
through the setup wizard and celebrated it until she gasped with pleasure.
Yeah.
That's absolutely perfect.
Totally fine.
What's the rig called? An 84 key?
84 key gaming keyboard with Gateron brown switches.
Okay. There at her 84 key gaming keyboard with Gateron brown switches, his tongue tracing the curve, that seems fine. His hand cradling the softness, the clickiness, as he took the tip in his mouth.
Tip of what?
The keyboard, it seems to be saying. What
he
do?
Oh, there? Maybe he takes the little key puller in his mouth. Because he's like, you know, he's pulling the keys, he's like putting new keys on.
Gotcha.
So he needs like, he puts a key puller in his mouth so he can like.
Yeah. Gotcha. And made her cry out with the sensation.
I guess that does it for her.
No, we can't have that, though, you see.
Oh, right. That's my point.
Made her cry out with delight. Yeah. He moved lower. We're almost done here. He moved lower and found the curve of the keyboard, his hands moving up and down the sides of the rig while his head rested on the clickiness of the keys. His lips found the slight swell of the, I guess maybe, should we just, what are those?
Gateron switches.
Of the Gateron switches. His hands gripping the fleshy roundness of
the anti-ghosting keys.
The anti-ghosting keys as his face moved lower still.
Okay.
And I think we should end there.
Okay. It's I don't kind think of, you have to get your face close to it.
No,
I think
you
it
don't
actually probably
to.
Works best if you don't, and it's better for your back.
Yeah.
It's better ergonomics.
But yeah, everybody, please do get one of those
rigs.
Do. It's good for, it's just nice to have that sound. It's very tactile.
Yeah.
And it's better for your posture.
And they light up in a funny way so that when you're sitting on your couch at night and you look around the corner to into your office, you'll notice that it's alive with rainbow colors because your mechanical keyboard refuses to turn off and it coats your entire office in rainbow light, which is kind of nice. Sort of soothing.
Do you want to do a quick girth check and then just get out of here?
Yeah, let's. How long that done?
Oh, we got to do our Mohs scale as well. So we'll do a quick girth check. This is our segment. It's called... Check. How long that dong?
How thick that stick?
What's the worth of that girth? Is something that Jamie suggested.
Yeah,
We got a lot. We got a lot of segment titles for this one.
Something to keep in mind is there's no judgment here. Yeah. We're not saying one size of girth is better than the other. We are butchers.
We're butchers. We're meat, but we're butchers.
We're meat
just,
men.
We're just weighing it. We want to get a sense of how long that.
We're
dong.
Here to appraise this man's penis. And then
move out.
Move on.
Move out. Wrap it up in some butcher paper, you know, sell it by the pound, and then move on.
Don't care what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Not our business.
Here's, I think, the passage. "You think it not strange to ask a man if he tasted of lewd women while fighting God's war?" He responded with a broad grin. "I think you are not a holy man, my lord," he returned readily with a smile of his own. "As I have heard many men say, when the Lord gave me steel to fight for him, he did not take my yard of flesh," he said to their appreciative laughter.
A yard?
A yard. And I don't know my...
Sorry. I shouldn't react like that.
We're just butchers here.
We're butchers.
It's nothing. But that's a lot. That's like...
Too much.
6 inches? 7 inches? I don't know how many inches is in a yard, but it's a lot.
Right. You're British. It's like a meter.
What? That's too much of it.
Yeah. I don't even think my 2.5-year-old son is a yard tall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been quite a girth check.
Yeah. That's enormous. Well, and I say that not as like a value judgment, but as like a, I've got like Auga money signs in my eyes.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, I'm going to make a lot of money moving that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We like to end these discussions by doing a quick, by popular request, rating these novels on the Mohs scale of hardness.
Yes.
This one.
This was a request from
Baby
Sex
B.
Bug Joel.
Yeah.
Somebody wanted to know how hard the books were making us.
Somebody in the Facebook group has been pushing pretty hard for baby birds and bees, which I do like.
No, that won't do.
Yeah.
It's sex bugs and
bed pots. Yeah, so Sex Bug Joel asked us to rate this on the Mohs scale of hardness. I think so. This one, they have the scene that we just read about the keyboard repair situation is the sexiest scene in the book. And then after that, there's a lot of shorthand that's basically like, they're doing it every night, but I'm not going to get into a lot of detail about precisely what happens. Just be sure that it's like, it sounds exhausting.
Because they're both like warriors, so they bring this like warrior energy into their lovemaking.
Yeah.
It's very angry.
So I've got the Mohs scale of hardness here, and I think this one, for me, I'm going to put this at a calcite?
You think so?
That's a number, that's a 3 on the scale.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right.
Yeah.
I think it was, it's about, that's a, so a copper penny is a 3.5.
Yeah. So it's,
so it's just softer than a copper penny.
Yeah. It's almost as hard as a copper penny. Definitely
and a little bit harder than a fingernail.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
I think that's about right. I think it's definitely a sexy book and it made me hard, but there's a lot of history that you kind of get caught up in, you know, like medieval history where you're like, oh, interesting. I didn't realize that the Normans and the Welsh were aligned against the English.
Yeah.
Crown,
yeah, which is not very sexy. Very interesting, but
it's not. It's interesting, yeah. It made me hard intellectually. Yeah.
And then that stuff about like the ergonomic gaming keyboards, I found took me out of the sexiness and took me out of the history stuff. Unfortunately,
oh, I disagree. Yeah. That brought me right up to quartz, somewhere between orthoclase and quartz, which is, well, is about as hard as a steel nail.
Okay, well, this has been all the time we have for today, and I would like to leave and also to go.
Yes.
I'd like to thank you, Tanner, so very much for bearing with me.
You're welcome.
I'd like to thank the Sex Bugs and, of course, the Bedpots for bearing with us. You know, keep pushing for baby birds and bees. It's such a great idea, but right now it's Sex Bugs and Bedpots, and it's a punishment, and I don't know why.
At least it's not Sex Pots anymore, so.
Yeah.
You know, be happy with what you've got.
I would like to thank Kat Sebastian for joining us this week and being very game to come on our completely silly podcast. She's a very successful romance novelist and didn't need to do it. And we're grateful that she did. And you should all go check her out on her website or Twitter and buy her dang books.
Read all her books. We loved Unmasked by the Marquess.
Yeah, really fun.
And she just has a ton more. My wife, Jamie, who is friendly with her on Twitter, says that a lot of Kat Sebastian's books are male. So if you like hot, steamy, gay sex, go check out more of Kat Sebastian's books.
Maybe we will do another one sometime in the future. Please do remember you must subscribe to our Patreon. We've got another tier now. We're bad at announcing it everywhere that we need to, but we're talking about the Babysitter's Club Netflix show on our new Patreon tier, and it's tons of fun, and lots of people are along for the ride, and they like it, and we like it, and we wish you'd join us. You could also, if you sign up for that tier, you'll also get our other tier, which is where we talk about the Sweet Valley Twins books. Lots of podcasts from us on lots of different types of topics, and they're all fun and good and fun. And it's patreon.com/BSCC podcast. I would also like to remind you that if you just want to support the show, you can go to our support page, which you can find by going to bit.ly/rattlesnakejake and clicking on support. And I would like to say a special thank you to Sharon, Catherine, Anna, Samantha, Betsy, Sarah, Kat, Corinne, Aaron, Olivia, and Kara. And you can join those lovely people by going to our support page at bit.ly/rattlesnakejake.
I would say that the name of that URL, bit.ly/rattlesnakejake, would make more sense if you were a
subscriber
listener of our Patreon show. But it doesn't really matter. It doesn't make any more sense.
Please rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts. It helps us to move through the rankings, and it helps other people to discover the show. You can also help people to discover our show by telling a friend, someone who maybe likes a romance, or someone who likes the Babysitter's Club and wants to listen to our
Or mechanical
catalog.
Keyboards.
Yep. finally, you must join our Facebook group. It's called Baby Nation on Facebook. Everyone in there is good and nice. And you must also buy our merch at bit.ly/BSCC merch. We're going to probably put some new merch up pretty soon. So more on that later. All that remains is for me to say that this week I have, of course, been Jack Alexander Shepherd.
My name is Tanner.
Next week, we're going to be reading, I think, a novel called Spoiler Alert by Olivia Dabe.
Okay, what's the novel?
Okay, it's called Spoiler Alert, Tanner. Come on. That's what I've decided. That's what I say. My wife read it and she really liked it. And so that's what we're going to read. And unless sometimes Jamie is like, no.
No, Jamie, so, I ran it by Jamie. She said, I think that's a good one.
Okay, good. My wife said it's really funny. So we're looking forward to that. All that remains is for Tanner to do the big outro from the book.
Right. Yes. And I love doing that part.
Yeah, that's good. I was glad when you decided, when you took it upon yourself, because I knew that it was always going to go super seamlessly.
Yes. And I love doing this part. It's my favorite part.
Yeah.
And here I go.
Yeah.
Legitimately, iBooks is not I'm looking at a blank white page.
Perfect.
This, I thought wildly, my flesh was made for this, for Jack,
okay,
to yield to him,
okay,
to withstand his force,
okay,
to meet it and equal it. I wished this podcast would go on forever, but even as I thought it, the pleasure began to burst inside of me.
Okay.
A sound erupted from my mouth, my arms straight, hands pushing against the cold
computer
podcasting desk as my pleasure reached its peak.
Perfect. How is it that all these books are so perfectly capture the experience of our show?
The feeling, the emotion of podcasting. I don't know.
Yep.
I don't know.
Goodbye, everybody. We might be childhood friends, and I might drive you around the bend, but I'm sure as crazy kids will work it out in the end. I might kiss you on the lips despite your nose, but I guess that's how it goes. Let's keep falling in love with our strange bedfellows.
Thank you for purchasing our 84-key ergonomic mechanical gaming keyboard with Gateron brown switches and anti-ghosting keys. Here's what customers can expect. Our mechanical keyboard technicians will be everywhere at once, hands unsticking a customer's shift key, tangling their hair, and installing some red key clicker membranes. We guarantee that their mouses will be hot on the mouse pad as they strain to connect it via Bluetooth. Our state-of-the-art 84-key gaming layout will glow with a soothing RGB light against our customer's face, and the N key rollover allows for a swelling number of key presses against the LED backlit keyboard. Customers will also hear the clicky pushing of keys as the installation technician pulls their hands off the keyboard and manipulates them gently to type ever so slowly and tenderly on their new rig. Excited customers will find themselves breathing hard as their body restlessly moves against the keyboard, while the certified keyboard specialist takes time to touch the ergonomic keyplate everywhere, touching every single key slowly and expertly. Our customers' hands and mouths will discover unexpected clickiness in the keys that they'd never find on the keyboard of a standard device. Customers can expect their hard muscle and sinew to melt from hard and enthusiastic ergonomic typing that's good for the posture and easy on the hands. Everything our customers valued in their previous keyboard rigs will be forgotten as soon as our certified installation technician's mouse goes through the setup wizard and celebrates it. Delighted owners of the new 84-key ergonomic mechanical gaming layout with Gateron brown switches are guaranteed to gasp with pleasure. Customers will cry out with delight the moment their lips touch the slight swell of the Gateron switch and their hands grasp the fleshy roundness of the anti-ghosting keys. Congratulations.